What's up, everybody? Nick Sarnicola here, Forged by Fire, episode 17. We have my business partner of 21.
A couple decades
to my left today. So we're going to be hearing his story in just a second. Super exciting to be able to share his background with you all. But first, let's talk about what is Forged by Fire and how do we get here. My backstory, from Michigan originally, wanted to be successful one day, became an entrepreneur through the direct sales network marketing industry at 18, became a millionaire in that industry at 25, company went out of business. We bought the assets of that company, turned it into a major success story of all the most extreme ups and downs you can imagine. So every success, every failure, product launches, country expansions, billions in sales, lawsuits, fallouts, like all the most extreme emotions and ups and downs. And through all of that was a lot of learnings of how to do things, but also how not to do things. And you know, Forged by Fire is bringing on guests that have had significant success, but talking about those moments of suffering, moments of pain, and the moments of fire and how that turned them into the leader or entrepreneur or success story that we are today. So this will be very interesting because I know this gentleman very well. Again, we've worked together for over two decades, and kind of my story is his story and his story is my story and vice versa. But now we get to go into some of that from purely his perspective. We've been hosted together and sharing our story, but you've never hosted me in sharing the story, and I've never hosted you for sharing the story.
This will be fun.
So this will be interesting. So
what will be interesting is I don't know if my version of my story is the same as your version
of
your
way.
It's like the perspective. Same story, same time, same moment, but the perspective will be interesting.
Well, it'll be more interesting if you start arguing with the host about facts, about the factual accuracy.
I don't know if that was true or not true.
So
we have to fact check those.
Who is the fact checker on this? So let's start with your backstory. You're from where? What was your childhood like? What was the journey?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, super exciting. Been awesome watching Forged by Fire come alive. And I think it's so...
I had help with the name.
Yeah. Oh, it is a great name. I mean, it is. I mean, you got it. The brand, right? The name.
The name was...
It's a good one.
It was a back and forth conversation between Blake and I about our stories and how to create... something that our podcast that represented our journey and Forged by Fire.
Yeah, well, it's awesome because it's real, right? I mean, so, and you and I both know, and I think probably a lot of the entrepreneurs, solopreneurs watching, we go through the fire. You have to go through the fire, right? And when you go through the fire, although when you're in the middle of it, it sucks. It's not what you want to deal with. But with enough perspective, you realize that those are the moments that make you. Those are the moments that define you. Those are the moments that you have to overcome to become. And, you know, I know there's a lot of great podcasts out there, but to dive right into the fire moments that forge the people that are doing great things today, I think it's just an awesome conversation, and it's great that you're bringing this to the world, and be fun to have this conversation and a shift in perspective with us today. Because I know what you're talking about. Like, we've walked through a lot of fires.
So I'm not going to tell them your story, because I'm just going to be like, so Blake first did this.
So. I mean, the quick backstory for everybody kind of tuning in. So SoCal native. Not a entrepreneurial upbringing. Both my parents were public service. So my mom an educator, a teacher, counselor, then a principal. My dad career law enforcement. So you know the punchline of the joke of, yes, a principal and a cop as parents. So very much the traditional path, which brought me down to school in San Diego, UCSD, where I thought I was law school bound. Growing up, I felt like I had a lot of pressure. Like in hindsight, I don't think I was in an environment where my parents really put an abnormal amount of pressure on me. I think it was just normal, you know, people growing up with expectations. But I felt that way. Like I felt that in order for me to be successful, it was like you're a lawyer, a doctor, or a failure, right?
You're a high performer. You've always been a high performer. So a lot of that pressure you put on yourself.
Probably, right? You know, whether it came from my parents or school or just, from myself. But, you know, went to school, thought I was going to go... the law direction, so degrees in political science, emphasis in public law, minor in psychology, like was building the resume, and then, you know, fell into the world of entrepreneurship, his fault, well, big part of his fault, you know, at 19 years old, which kind of shifted everything, starting with shifting environment, right? So you can't surround yourself with people that think differently, do different things for long enough before it starts to rub off and it literally shifts a perspective. And it started, you know, I think both of us at a young age with, you know, the right mentors, right environment, different education. And then that began a journey of now, well, you know, whatever it is, over 2 decades, 22 years in the entrepreneurial space, up, down, all around, and everywhere in between.
So your introduction to entrepreneurship was through what industry? And tell us about the first, I don't know, take me through the first 5 years of that.
Yeah, well, first, so the first moment, we'll date myself here, came from an AOL instant message. So I don't know if anybody watched, I don't know if you guys remember AOL, America Online Instant Message. College dorm room, 19 years old, all of a sudden, boom, right, pops up in the middle of, you know, me doing work, a high school acquaintance, and literally the line says, hey, do you want to make some extra money, right? And to which I was never like a skeptical person, right? So my literal reply to that was, sure. that was it. To which he replied, okay, show up to this place, you know, at this time tomorrow. And to which I replied, okay. And that was literally the conversation that kind of opened the door.
Big recruiting message.
Yeah, zero context, right? And in hindsight, like that could have meant anything. Like late at night on a college campus, do you want to make some extra money? Like that could have meant any number of things. Yeah, and here's me just like, okay, sure, no problem.
Where do I show up to?
Where do I show up to? So yeah, gave an address to a neighboring university. And you know, truth of the story is like, I didn't know what I was going into. I had no idea. This was like a high school acquaintance, not a good friend. Like I knew him, but it wasn't someone that I was like super close with.
Yep.
And I just didn't know what I was walking into. So I didn't want to go alone. So I just ran up and down my dorm room floor just saying, hey, I'm going to this thing. Don't know what it is. There's a way to make some extra money. Someone that I knew in high school, come with me. And I ended up bringing a group of people just to go with me. So I wasn't going alone. I had no idea what, you know, direct sales, yeah, network marketing, community-based marketing was. I had never been introduced to it before. I didn't know it was like a type of thing you're supposed to bring people to. But then I was the person that showed up with this group of people. And everybody in the room was like, who is this guy that brought all these group of people? Like, I did it intentionally. And, you know, long story short, the speaker that night pulled me aside and just said, hey, you know, are you the one that brought this whole group? I'm like, yeah. Like, how'd you do that? I'm like, my dorm room floor. And they said, well, you got to meet our mentor, the person that we're working with. And the next day I sat down for lunch with Nick for the very first time. He was the mentor that was mentoring the presenter that night that had moved from Michigan to San Diego. And yeah, I remember that lunch very distinctly. And that was the beginning conversation of our relationship and what ultimately was the beginning of kind of the entrepreneurial journey for me.
Well, how did you choose entrepreneurship over law school?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it goes back to the education, right? So a lot of times people ask, they go, oh, was, you know, how much of your, you know, quote unquote success came from your academic work, right? Or came from the degrees, to which I always smile, laugh, and I say, well, honest answer is probably none of it directly. However, what I did learn through school well is I learned how I learn.
Okay.
And I remember very distinctly, like I learned how I learn and I mastered that. And that's why I was able to get good grades and go through all the accelerated courses, graduate in 3 years, because I learned how to learn. And then I was running motions to go through it in school. So my point in that is when I found a new genre of education, I actually enjoyed.
Okay.
So the personal growth, development, financial literacy, entrepreneurship, marketing, just that whole, you know, section of what back then was like a small few rows of a bookstore, right? I was like, wow, I love this. And I just applied the student mentality, how I learned, to that genre of education that I loved, just became a student, right? And just started engulfing the books and the audios and the seminars and...
Three of the early on books that you loved the most.
Early on. So, I mean, the obvious one that every entrepreneur usually starts with would be Think and Grow Rich, right? So, I mean, that kind of is the Bible, so to speak, of entrepreneurship and really modern day personal growth and development. A lot of it starts there. You know, it's funny, if we were to go upstairs right now, in my office, I have a bookshelf, and in the center bookshelf, I have a stack of a couple books that I put there in the center because they were the books that had the biggest influence on me early. So that's the base of beyond the Bible, right? Then it's Think and Grow Rich. And then the second one would probably be, and you remember this because we used to train it all the time. It was a Robert Kiyosaki book, But it's not the Rich Dad, Poor Dad that everybody knows as Robert Kiyosaki. It was a good introductory book. It was the second version, a book called Cashflow Quadrants, which although it's probably super dated today, the principles are still the same, absolutely, right? And I remember very distinctly it broke down, look, there's four types of people as it relates to like business, right? There's the employee mentality, right? There's the self-employed mentality, there's the business owner, and there's the investor. And that hit me hard because I was law school bound.
You're on path for self-employed.
S. And he says in the book, he goes, not only is that like not the B or the I, that's the most painful place to be because you got all the stress, all the work, all the weight, right? And you still don't have full control. And I was like, that's like a smack in the face.
I remember it said S for suicidal. So they thought they were S for Superman, but it's really S for suicidal.
And that's the truth. And that was like an eye-opening moment, right, through that book, because that was the first time I heard, well, that wasn't the right way.
Yep.
That's not what success looked like. That's not what everybody's should trying to be. Like, they're looking at that as inferior to this business concept or investor concept. So I'd say those were probably some of the, you know, the two early on. And then I know you and I both loved John C. Maxwell and all the books when it comes to leadership. But those would be some of the, probably some of the early influential books for sure.
So I know pretty much most of the fires that we've both been through. So I'm going to skip the first two burns.
We're going to go to the... what fire are we going to focus on?
We're going to go to the last one much later.
Maybe
we'll do a podcast in a couple of years that goes to the last. But let's go to fire number three.
Okay, fire number three. That was a big fire.
Prior to fire number three, fire number two had forced us to create a company.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So fire number two pushes in to create a company.
Yep.
And why don't you walk us through the first few years of the creation of that company.
Yeah, and it's relevant to this conversation, right? Because sure. I remember when you and I were both in the moment, we were walking into an event we were throwing, and we got the phone call that the company was going to go out of business, and the company didn't have any money. And here we are literally walking in front of a room full of people to paint a vision of this company that we just got told by the CEO isn't going to exist.
And his partner was in the room with us, not knowing that we were talking to him. And she was the guest speaker.
And we...
You remember that?
I do remember. I remember having this whole conversation in like cryptic, generic language. Like, we're building a movement.
Two-day event.
Just somewhere about something. We stopped. We're like, what are we going to do? But it is the point of in the ashes of what we thought was everything and what we thought was our life and what we thought we were done. And the ashes of that gave birth to what started us in the ownership side, right? Yeah. I mean, we never would have leaped into the ownership side, the founder side of this channel had it not been for that door closing, another door opening. But to answer your question, so we built, you know, 5 years, you know, in the anti-aging space, supplement space, you know, nothing extraordinary, not the fastest out of the gates, but a slow and steady build, right? Yep. To the point where it was, I don't remember what we got to, but I feel like it was around $5 million a month or so in sales-ish and a stable business. And obviously that then opened the door to the, you know, the Blythe conversations and the next step there.
Early years. So early startup, this is actually great for people that are, you know, in the early years of a startup, early months. You know, what was your lifestyle like? What was your income like? What was the workload like?
Oh man.
I'm talking about pre-move to LA, back to the San Diego days.
Yep. So true story, right? So in this time period, we're building a company. I don't remember how many of us there were. I feel like we could fit it on one hand. Like, there was only a couple of us that were even putting everything together. Everything from, you know, we need the company. We need the logo. What are we writing? What's the book? What's the materials? What's the video?
I think there's four of us, to be honest with you.
I think that's what I'm saying. It was one hand.
Philip, Eric, you and me. We had three that were shipping product and doing finance.
Yeah, and literally a closet somewhere in Michigan.
Yeah, yeah.
Doing everything.
Yeah.
Where was I financially? It's funny, my wife's decorating in the house right now, and she would probably correct me and highlight this part of the story. But I remember when I told my parents that I wanted to do this thing. And they thought I was crazy. And I said, well, look, I'm going to graduate college early. Give me the year that I would normally be in college and let me try this entrepreneurial. That was like the logic or the rationale. Like, hey, I was going to be here anyway. I'm graduating early. Let me just take this crack. But I didn't have any other money coming in other than what we were making at the time. And I remember when the school got out, you know, my girlfriend at the time, now wife, right, had a one-bedroom little apartment in a college campus with a roommate. And I remember telling her, like, hey, is it okay if I crash here for a week? And I would crash there. We shared a twin bed next to a roommate who had a twin bed in a one-bedroom college, like, not even apartment. And we'd do meetings during the day and build everything.
I'd slept on that couch.
And build everything during the day. And then like a week would go by and I'm like, oh, can I just crash another week? And like a week would go by. And I ended up just staying at her house and living at her house rent free for like months while we're building. She still points that out. Like, you remember when you kind of said, like, how what happened?
I remember that apartment. I remember you guys, I was sleeping on the couch one night. You guys accidentally locked the door. So I was like, I'll just slide the window over. And I pushed and I put my hand through. See the scar here? This scar is putting my hand through Karis's glass window and sliced. I mean, I can't believe it didn't hit a vein, but I remember that place.
Yeah. But I mean, it goes to show you, like, it didn't matter. Like, you couldn't have looked at us and say, you know, we didn't have absolute certainty in where we were going, right? Absolute clarity that we were going to make it. Didn't matter that we were in the middle of a transitionary period, right? You know, we knew in the end we were going to create something. But yeah, like any entrepreneur in startup mode, round the clock, everything's on you. But it's kind of the fun part. Like, it's fun when you're there and all you have is a vision for what you want to create and everything is up from that point. You know, but yeah, as scrappy as it can be as far as the beginning, for sure.
Okay, to the peak then before that third fire. Got this thing to a few million a month. It's making money. It's profitable. Do you remember the feeling of your first seven-figure check? And how old were you?
Yeah, of course. I have I think I have the photo upstairs on my desk.
I guess it was the wire, right?
Yeah. I was 25. All right, so I was 25 years old. I remember when became a liquid multimillionaire. And yeah, I mean, I remember that feeling distinctly. I remember us celebrating at the time, and I guess it's both sides, right? And if I were to go back to that moment, on one end, it's like the we made it, like the we did it, like the victory lap. On the other end, it wasn't a surprise.
Yeah,
you know, like it is, and it's not ego speaking. It's like when you're so certain you're going to create something, and you refuse to stop until you're there. Nothing's going to prevent you until it happens. You may not know the time frame, but you know you're going to cross that finish line. When you get there, it's celebratory, but it's also like not a surprise because your mind has already been there for however long it took, right? And the truth is, by the time that you get to that moment, your mind is already so far into the future of what's next, right, and where you're going. And this is something we all can probably learn to do better, is to pause and actually appreciate where you're at more so than still being stuck onto what comes next. But I know both you and I share that we got there, we celebrated, but we were already on to what is the next bigger, better thing.
What's an eight-figure check?
Yeah, what's the next step, right? But yeah, for sure. I mean, it's a photo that I look back on and I can't help but smile because it was a transitionary shift in my life.
You've always been really good at keeping photos and videos. Mm-hmm. So if you find yours,
I think we're right together.
Send it to me. Now I can pretend it's my bank account. That way I can say that's my.
I think we got a photo somewhere of like we logged into our bank accounts. Like, oh my God, it's real. But yeah.
Multimillionaires.
Yeah.
You're 25.
25.
So you hit on a good point. So let's jump to that for a moment. Mm-hmm. How critical was the act of visualization, seeing, you know, it all play out, and how repetitive, how critical were those things in that creation, and are they still to you today?
Yeah. I mean, I know anybody that's listened to personal growth, read, following today's thought leaders, or really talk to anybody that's achieved anything of greatness in any category, like everybody says the same thing, right? So you don't accidentally stumble your way to where you want to go. I've never met anybody that's achieved anything that say, oh yeah, I just woke up one day here and it just happened. Like, yeah. It's just no one ever. Everything starts with an intention. Like, you have to have an intention of what you want to do and a vision of where you see yourself and the life that you want to have for yourself. It all starts there. And that's the thing that pulls you through. That's the thing that keeps you going. That's the thing that picks you up when you're down. That's the thing that fires you up when you know, things are working. It all is real up here before it's ever real here. So yeah, for me, that was, it was always, you can call it visualization, but to me, it was always a certainty of the life I was going to design. I knew I was going to get there. I couldn't have told you when or how long, but I knew I wouldn't stop until that moment was real. And I think that's still true today. I think everything starts up here and you attract what you see. And I think one of the things as entrepreneurs that you got to go through is as you do accomplish milestones or check things off your goal list, you got to make sure you're constantly expanding that vision to that next step. Because you and I have both seen a lot of people that accomplish it, they celebrate and they forget to forecast what's next, and that becomes a plateau, right? Or you know, a peak that then declines. So I think constantly expanding what is next is important.
So the organization name that you had named in your early 20s was what?
Well, you can't say you when we did it.
Well, it's weird because I'm interviewing you as if I wasn't a part of it.
So I mean, and we had studied great organizations, right? And in studying any organization that creates what I would call like a movement. And I know that word can be overused, but like a movement's a movement. A movement is when you get a group of people coming together in unison to go create change, to go accomplish something, right? To go move in a direction that creates impact. And we've studied a lot of the organizations, and one of the things that you realize is a common thread of all organizations is some sort of cause, right? There's got to be some sort of fire, some sort of cause, something that's bigger than someone's individual goals or even the collective of individual goals. It's got to be some bigger cause. So I remember when we created our kind of first cause, which was Arrive by 25. And the cause was just to give college kids at the time, all of us where we were, a vehicle, a community, a path, a group of mentors, an education to become financially free by the time they were 25 years old, to be quote unquote done financially from the sake of not wanting to like retire at that point, but to be financially free and options of what we go and want to do from that point forward. And it created a movement, it created attraction.
Kind of like everywhere. An off-ramp of corporate America.
Yeah, another way.
Yeah. Okay, so you got this seven-figure Arrive by 25 wire. for the acquisition of your company in a 4-year buyout.
Yep.
And what happens the next month?
Yeah, it's crazy.
And
so we thought we were done, right? So we build this company 5 years to the success level I mentioned earlier, and there were certain relationships that were kind of in place to then open up the next door of we got acquired. You know, we got acquired by a multi-billion dollar at the time, global holding company that specialized in our channel, that specialized in, you know, direct sales. And we thought like, this is it. Like we weren't trying to exit. I think we were just beginning. It wasn't like, hey, this is our off ramp. It was, hey, this is going to be our accelerator to allow us to become our own billion-dollar company and build this mission across the world. And this would be, you know, this is it. This would be the community that allow us to do it. And so, yeah, we signed the year. And actually, the deal structure was a 3-year deal. But then in the deal, they had what they called in the deal, I think the term was a flex year.
Called a mulligan.
We call it the mulligan.
Mulligan.
The mulligan year. You know, so we go in and we're in New York and we're celebrating the dinner with, you know, the company that acquired us and mentors and people that were at one time like Forbes, you know, billionaire list. And literally a couple weeks after that was the 2008 recessionary collapse. Like the Lehman Brothers, the news, the headlines, the banks are going under. And here we were, a high-end premium anti-aging product on a subscription that was like the first thing that people ticked off, right?
Unsubscribe.
Unsubscribe, right? It was like the first thing off. So I remember we'd spent 5 years building up our revenue line around $5 million a month to within 5 months. You know, we were down 90%. Like, I mean, it was like I think we were down to around $600,000 in sales a month. So 5 million, 5 years and 5 million a month up, and then like 5 months collapse down to 600,000 a month. I remember it distinctly because we had 600,000 a month in sales coming in. We were losing, right, $600,000 a month or so, right, underwater. And we had $600,000 like left in the bank. So I remember it being like a 666, like this is devastation. And we were like literally a month, 2 months max, right, away from no other options and just complete devastation and bankruptcy.
What did the investors say or choose to do as this is unraveling?
They had to write us off. You know, so I mean, we were just got acquired by a large public company at this, you know, increasing, you know, sales trend. And now all of a sudden, everybody, we all look horrible. Like we look like we sold a bag of goods. Like we sold a company that all of a sudden was, and I remember because our other partner who was supposed to go to that board meeting in New York in front of that $1 billion public company international board got sick the day he was supposed to break these news. So I ended up getting on the plane and sitting in front of this board. I mean, I'm young, green executive, and I remember just getting roasted. Like the words I wouldn't even say on live on in this conversation, but you know, I remember this big board member from France and these other Wall Street, like, what? I mean, profanities. I mean, what did you guys do? Like it was our fault, you know? And the truth is it was the reset. I mean, it was the banks went out of business. Like channels collapsed. Like it was the world. It wasn't that we made a mistake. You know, but we were in a situation where literally we got written off. The people that acquired us wrote us off. So therefore no more support. We were in this kind of structure earnout deal where the first year was not off to a good start and our business model that we built no longer worked, you know, and that was the moment we found ourselves in like first part of 2009.
What was, can you remember what some of the feelings were you're feeling as that year's unfolding and sales are dropping and, you know, you start to see the investors pull away and, I'll add this, you didn't say this, but your top leaders are leaving.
Yep. Yep.
Right. What were some of the reactions, feelings, where some of the places you went, you know, mentally, emotionally?
Yeah. You know, I guess mixed feelings, right. As you would imagine when you're in that situation, I mean, you can't help but feel like you work so hard for so long. And in hindsight, 5 years it's an amount of time, but it's not that amount of time. But when you're like, you know, early 20s, like 5 years, all of your adult life. So in a quarter of all your life, right? So, I mean, it feels like it was a long time up. So a little bit, you feel, I don't know if cheated's the word, but like you worked hard, you got this point, you thought you were there. And the minute you get there, you find that it just gets taken, right? Almost instantly. So it was easy to allow those thoughts in. And I think it'd be lying if there weren't some of that, like, oh, are you serious? We thought we were there and we're not. You know, and you have people that are leaving, you know, people left us, our top income earners left us, right? So there's all the doubt. And you know, you can't help but creep back in the what I call the supposed to mentality, right? The negative self-talk from, man, is this really the right way? Is this entrepreneur thing really going to work? Is this where we get off and go back to the traditional path, right? Or maybe all the naysayers that have ever told you you're crazy and this won't work, are they all going to give you the told you so, right? I mean, all that stuff gets in, right, to some extent. But I remember even with all of that, like even with the ability to like be bummed out that the minute we get our open door, a door shuts, or even with the negative self-talk, or even with the, hey, you know, is this the right thing? I remember a key is like, we knew we were in it together, right? And when you have the right partnership that just all knows that nobody's going to quit, right? And it doesn't matter how bad it gets, nobody's gonna quit. They're all gonna be there. We're gonna figure it out. There's some sort of strength in that bond and strength in those numbers. So I think it's important to make sure you got the right people around you to have the skin in the game, because there is power and unity in that. Like, hey, we're going through the fire, but it's easier to go through the fire when you got other people next to you in the same fire. And I think even with all the negative talk, you and I will both agree, we still knew we were going to win. I mean, I never had any doubt that we couldn't figure it out. And I think a belief system got built there that I still carry today. And it doesn't matter what circumstances happen or what external factors collide, I always believe that in any moment, we have the right people, right talent, and right resources to figure out a way. Now, those people, those resources, those talent may change over time, right? But I believe at any moment, the pieces of a puzzle are literally on the table. You just got to figure out what pieces you're going to pick up and how you're going to put a picture back in place. And I think those beliefs got forged then because we figured it out. We had the right people, right resources. Now, we made a picture that was totally different than where it was in the 5 years prior, but the resources were all there, and because we picked them up and put together the picture, it changed everything.
Any impact on personal life? Because this is, were you married yet?
Oh, you know, I'm so bad at time.
I'm trying to just host you here. You weren't married yet.
No, not married yet. Been with my wife, high school sweethearts. We've been together 22 years now. Married will be 10, coming up in May. So yeah, this period, you know, committed relationship, but no married, no kids.
I've never asked. Was there any
tension or difficulties there?
Yeah.
You know, the one thing I'm super fortunate is I've been fortunate to just be with a partner that was always supportive no matter what.
Nice.
You know, and I know not everybody has that, but, you know, we were together before I was even an entrepreneur, let alone before I ever had any sort of money, let alone, you know, I was on, if you hear her tell the story, I was on her couch.
No, I was on her couch.
We were both on her couch.
I was on her couch. You were in her bed. I was on her couch.
You're right. Same. So the point is we weren't together for those reasons, right? We were together for reasons before all of that. And she was always super supportive in the creation of all of that. And she was always supportive through and has always been supportive in the ups and downs ever since. And, you know, I guess I'm blessed and grateful to have always had that. And, you know, and for everybody that does listen, that's important. Like, you need to have the supportive, you know, spouse or relationship or someone that is going to be there to pick you up or believe in you or tell you can. Because we all have, you know, plenty of the world that's the naysayers and the people that tell us that we can and what's not going to work. It's important that the person in your corner believes in you and believes that you can. And, you know, I've always had that.
So company investors say, hey, we're out. We're not giving any more money. If you guys want to make this work.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
On your own. Yep. On your own.
Mm-hmm.
So what did we do?
Yeah. And most people at that time in our situation probably would have said, I'm out. Because we had gotten the first tranche of our exit, right? So, you know, it was a multi-year earnout and we got that first one we were talking about. So we could have stopped, right? And said, okay, we, you know, checked the box. This was a victory and gone and done something new and it would have been okay. You know, people would have understood. But I remember we took the money that we had taken off the table and we invested it back in to keep the company going, payroll going, and commissions going. And again, most people probably wouldn't have done that, you know. So we rolled it all in. And then I remember we asked ourselves kind of one big question, and because there was a shift in the economic environment, like we were in a recession, the world was in a recession, the consumer mindset was different, like. To try to ignore that or put blinders on or sell through that or charge through that would have been extremely naive. So I remember we asked ourselves, okay, this business model that we built worked in a luxury time, but it doesn't work now. And the ultimate question, which is really relevant maybe for where we're at today, is how do we reinvent ourselves for a recession? How do we tailor our message to a recessionary consumer? You know, how do we adapt and pivot in a way that's going to thrive in the environment that is now? And that was the question that we reverse engineered. And I remember we took this product of a shake that we already had on the shelf like a year ago that got no attention. We didn't focus. It was already there. It was a piece of the puzzle already on the table, right? And we just had to say, we're going to go use that because no matter how bad it gets, people still need to eat. And if we can position this as food, and speak to not only how it's going to provide somebody nutrition, but how it's actually going to save them money on their grocery bills at a time where money matters. You know, that could work. And then we say, well, what's going to be the number one objection? Well, the number one objection is going to be still money, even if it's replacing food. Well, okay, how do we show them how to get it for free and eat it for completely free? And we innovated a program where every consumer, by sharing it with others, could get their product for totally free. And I remember talking about like incentives at the time saying, you know, people don't care about becoming a millionaire. They don't care about, you know, all the hype and all of the glitz and the glamour and the stuff that the industry thrived on during that period. You know, what they care about is paying their car payment. And I remember saying, why don't we take a program and instead of having it be this huge thing at the top, like the channel had always done, let's put it right here at the middle, right, to get a car payment paid for our strong spare time part-timer, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But all these sequence of innovations that we're all speaking to a recessionary consumer and where the mindset we thought would be. And, you know, we wrapped all that around an innovative marketing message, the whole story behind the challenge is crazy in itself, of how that came from Dale Brown and challenging us and us seeing how social it was. But it goes back to what I said earlier. All these pieces were there, right? They were there prior. They were just in a different order. And we locked ourselves in a room. We got some of our leadership in a room and we just sat there for days until we just literally picked apart the company and put it back together in a different way. And it ended up being the right combination at the right time. Didn't happen initially, took work, took shedding more of our community, took rebuilding new, but ultimately us being in that moment in the fire on the brink of bankruptcy at a time where we could have walked, at a time where we could have thought, you know, the world was against us, going all back in again in that fire is then what took us to a level that made us as entrepreneurs and the success story that we ended up becoming. And it was all through that fire that forced us to make those decisions and overcome in order to become what ultimately we did. So yeah, that was a good fire.
Good fire. Good fire. You become a millionaire and you give it all right back.
Yeah. To become a decamillionaire.
To become a decamillionaire. Yeah. So anything else you want to share on that part of your story that you can recall, or any advice you want to give of when you relive that moment of, wow, I just got my first multi-seven-figure wire, I'm a multimillionaire at 25, 26, shortly after we see a year crash of sales, you're now, you know, 27 turning towards 28, and you got to give it all back if you want to keep it going. Anything else you can think of?
You know, I think the moral of my story, our story, and probably the moral of a lot of the conversations you're having with Forged by Fire and all the guests is you can't judge a moment when you're in it. Because it's easy if you judge a moment when you're in it to call it as good or bad, right? It's really easy to react of, you know, this is horrible or this is phenomenal. But the truth is, and if you reflect back on your life up until this point, like you don't know the moment that you're in it, if it's good or bad. You're not gonna know if that moment is good or bad for, you know, years or years or years down the road, right? Steve Jobs has that famous quote where he says, look, you know, the dots connect in the future, right? You know, you got to have faith that the dots you're going through are going to connect some way in the future. And if you take the perspective, and I'm kind of faith-based, and you can use and interpret that word however you want, but like, I do believe that things happen the way they're meant to happen. And that may not be the thing you want to happen. It might not be the easiest thing in that moment, but they're going to unfold the way they're meant to unfold. And even, you know, your victories are your victories, but the times when you go through the learning lessons, the hard, that is ultimately the things that are going to define you. And our story and my story over and over and over again proves that the hard things you go through end up becoming the doors that lead to whatever the next level may be. And it's easier to say that than to feel that when you're in the middle of it. But the more that you go through the fire, the more you start to appreciate the fire, not react to the fire, and realize that, hey, this is another one of those defining moments. Where is this going to lead me to next? So I think for everybody, I think being open to, even though things aren't working the way that you want, even though it's taking longer than you want, even though you get the curveballs that you don't want, all of that might be moving you in a direction that is actually what's best for you and what you're meant to do. So I think that's the philosophy. Yeah. You know, I think having people around you that have a shared belief and being in it together, like I mentioned, is key. I think being in a lane that you're truly passionate about, and able to make an impact on, you got to have that. Otherwise, you probably won't have the energy to keep walking through the fire if it's not something that really excites you and ignites you. So I think it's all those things, the excitement, you know, the people, and then ultimately the belief system that it can become greater than what once was, no matter where you're at. And I guess the last point is, I think now is a super valuable time to be having this conversation, because who knows what's going on? We're coming off a crazy last 2 years. Who knows what's going on in the world economically right now? But there is a lot of shift and transition happening. And inevitably, that's going to be a new set of challenges. And these might be the challenges. This might be the fire that you need to go to your next level, or your business needs to adapt or pivot or reinvent, or what you need to make the adjustments for your business like we did that ultimately define and create where you're meant to go. Like that, this may be that fire moment for you. And hopefully this conversation, those lessons, maybe shift your perspective to extract those pieces that are on the table and put them together in a way that can create your story.
Let's jump ahead. Let's go one decade further. You know, because you just touched on the recent last few years, mm-hmm. and what has happened the last few years? What type of opportunity has been created? Where have you been spending your energies and efforts? And what's been the outcome of these fires you've been forged by?
Yeah, it is so much, and it's been a weird last couple of years, right? So, like, honestly, the first thing that comes to my mind might not be the answer that you'd expect you're looking for. It's being able to go through pandemic, be in a situation where I could spend more time with my family, more time with my kids, right? You know, Grayson's now 7, Sadie's 4. In the last couple of years, to be able to actually be home more, sitting at the dinner table, going to the soccer games, like stepping into parent mode and dad mode and family mode has been awesome. And to be able to do that while still providing and having a lifestyle that we're able to do has been amazing. And that wouldn't have been possible had it not been through everything we've done and built prior to all of that. So I think family is the first thing that comes to mind. I think if there's anything pandemic maybe helped is it realigned a lot of values of what matters and what's important. So I think that's the first and foremost. I think now us being put into a platform where we can take what we've been through and actually share a little bit of wisdom and experience, which I know is weird because we used to be like the young cool kids and now we're like the wisdom.
we're the middle cool kids.
We're the middle. It's just we've been through a lot for our age, right? So like taking that experience and that perspective and actually paying it forward in a way that now we're able to see is making an impact, right, on people and applying that is a cool place. Like I had great mentors, but I wish I would have had someone that has been through what we've been through that was willing to take the time to really pass that on and direct and guide like we do for people, because it can save a lot of heartache and you know, compress a lot of time. So I think being able to pay it forward, make an impact is definitely something that I'm enjoying in this season for sure. And then now all the opportunities that are opening up on what we're able to do, you know, with our direction within the channel and you know.
Speak to that. You can be super specific there. Tell everyone what, you know, you've most recently spent your time in the last 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, so through all of those lessons and all of those learnings, being able to partner up with Prove It Now, right, and the ketone conversation, which you and I have been in the nutrition space for a long time. We've seen everything under the sun and I've, you know, obviously been successful in it. But to get behind a technology that I think is really, truly revolutionary and unique and protected and be at the forefront of really educating the world on what that technology is, I think is super cool. And it's fun to be able to get behind something that we think can make an impact and bring all of our perspective in a way that I think is going to help grow a brand, grow a platform, grow a company to a very large level has been super fun. And again, all of that comes with the scars, right? And with the pain and with the lessons. But it's great that now we get to apply that in a way that's making such an impact. And I think it's just the beginning.
What's your goal? How far do you think that goes? Where do you want to take that?
Oh, I mean, it's a good question. My personal goal is to continue to do what I have been doing at just the biggest scale that I can go. And I don't think you don't stay in this channel as long as you or I have stayed in this channel unless you love what it does for people, right? I mean, there's a million of exits that we could have got off, right? But we're still here in this direction. And that's because at the end of the day, I think this is an amazing platform to help somebody who has a desire and ambition and a hunger find a vehicle and a mentor and a community that's great. That transcends their household and their family and makes a ripple impact on people they want to impact. And that to me is one of the greatest structures that you ever could be in. So, you know, at the end of the day, I think it's just about impact, right? It's about, you know, watching somebody grow. It's about helping people believe that they can and then, you know, pursuing all that they're meant to be. And not only for them and their story, but then through them, what they're able to do for others.
Rounding this out, I usually end each episode with allowing the guests to speak to what's kind of like their wheelhouse topic. Mm-hmm. Like, all right, you've got, right now you've got sales professionals watching, you've got entrepreneurs, you've got solopreneurs, and probably a bunch of gig economy participants. What's your wheelhouse topic? What's your go-to topic of like, this is the number one, you know, or your sweet spot? If there's anything I want to teach you, it is.
I mean, if I were to take maybe the summary of this conversation and the highlights of it, I'd say it's that everything's a mind game. You know, at the end of the day, it's all about a belief system you choose to adopt, and a belief system you choose to tell yourself. And that belief system is going to be your operating system, not just for your business or, you know, your new project, but it's going to be your operating system for your life. You know, and so many of us were never taught that, nor are we put in an environment where someone is going to insert or give us the shifts that we need to become all that we can become. So for me, that's been, you know, the common thread, right, in all those moments, is we get to choose how and what we believe in that moment. And the belief that we choose dictates the actions we take and ultimately the result that we get. And through the fire and through all of the trials and tribulations, we've been fortunate to select beliefs that have got us through in a way that has created an impact. So I think that's probably my most passionate topic, is just trying to get people to understand, how do we make a little shift? How do you look at something a different way, in a way that empowers you and moves you, as opposed to a way that maybe keeps you stuck? Because the truth is, so many people today are stuck, and they're stuck not for any other reason than the conversation they're having in their own head.
Where do people find you?
Well, that's easy. My name, at Blake Mallon. See you everywhere.
what's your favorite social channel?
Yeah, I mean, any of them. At Blake Mallon on Instagram. If this conversation inspired you, if there was one piece that created a shift, you know, I would love the feedback. So to shoot me a DM, I answer everything directly. And, you know, if we connect, I'll follow back. Just at Blake Mallon on Instagram. But we can connect on Facebook, TikTok, all the places.
Beautiful. Episode 17, Forged by Fire. My business partner of over 20 years, Blake Mallon. My first time I've ever interviewed him. So we've got a to be continued on this, because there's some fires that we jumped over that we'll come back and share, you know, in the future. But hopefully you guys are able to get something out of this, and you're able to pull from, you know, his story and his learnings and his failures and how he turned those into successes. You know, if you like what you're hearing, you like the uniqueness of going deep into, you know, where things aren't working, you know, take the channel, share it with people, take the episodes, you know, put them up there in your social, get the word out there. We'd be grateful for it. And we'll be ready for you to see you again very soon on episode 18. So, Forged by Fire, thank you, Blake.
Thank you.
That's a wrap.